The first seal, segment number 10, Revelation chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. The first horseman, which John sees as described in these verses under the first seal, symbolizes world domination under a man empowered by Satan. This man will oppose the claim of Jesus of Nazareth that he is the Christ which has been promised to the earth. The Antichrist will proclaim Jesus and Christ to be two separate individuals. That will be the line of attack, that Jesus is not the Christ, that Jesus and the Christ are two separate persons. This denial that Jesus was the Christ sent from God in fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant is the biblical mark of the Antichrist. This is one way the Bible says you will be able to identify the Antichrist, because he will deny that the Jesus of Nazareth, born in Bethlehem, is also the Messiah Christ. For example, in 1 John chapter 2, verse 22, we read, "Who is the liar, but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ? He is Antichrist that denieth the Father and the Son." And then in 1 John chapter 4, the first three verses, we read, "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. By this know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesses not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, of which ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is in the world." The denial that the Christ has come in human form is a mark of the Antichrist. In the book of 2 John, verse 7, we may add, "For many deceivers are entered into the world, who confess not that Jesus Christ cometh in the flesh. This is the deceiver and the Antichrist." The one who denies that Jesus is the Christ come in human form is clearly the Antichrist. That will be one of his key denials. Now, the reason he wants to separate Jesus and Christ is in order for him to take the position of the Christ. And groups like the New Age movement are gearing up in order to prepare people for receiving the Christ. It was only last summer that $500,000 was spent in major newspapers all across the world, in major cities, announcing that the Christ had now arrived, that he would reveal himself shortly in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and he would be known as Lord Maitreya. And all of the New Age movement thought that they had now arrived at the point where they could bring their man that they had been preparing for this role into the public limelight for the general public to view. Something has happened. He did not appear. But the plan is still under effect. The plan is still going to be implemented at the right time down the line. The man of sin, the Antichrist, will be presented to the world. He will be presented as the Christ which God has promised. So that's why the Antichrist is going to make a distinct effort to separate Jesus as being the Christ. Thus, the forces built on Eastern mysticism are openly preparing the world for the true Christ, who will, in their view, be the Antichrist of Scripture prophecy. The nations of the world, of course, are looking for peace, and they're looking for a leader who can save them from nuclear destruction. The United Nations was founded to keep peace on the earth, but instead it has become a propaganda board for socialism, and it's divided itself into antagonistic power blocks. In desperation, therefore, the superpowers have constant hotline telephone communications with each other in the hope of being able to prevent such a nuclear war. There are constant rounds of conferences in Geneva to secure disarmament and to establish peace treaties, but all in vain. No sooner are agreements made then the superpowers violate them. So anyone who comes along who seems credible in being able to promise the world peace that the United Nations has not been able to establish is going to be welcomed by mankind. The people of the world are in fact being prepared to seek a world government with the power to ban war, with the power to feed the people, with the power to spread the wealth around, and with the power to control the use of energy in order to serve the master plan which has been devised by the group of elite leaders who are called the Masters of Wisdom. The hope for such a world society is being directed toward the future Antichrist. The world's hope for a world of peace and prosperity, however, will never be realized apart from Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. And that is the problem. The one person who could establish peace is not welcomed in the halls of the United Nations. While they deny the Prince of Peace, all their hopes are in vain. Now, we have indicated to you this morning that in order to bring a people under control, the foundations of their personal freedoms must be destroyed. Those foundations rest upon an ample supply of cheap energy, a money system which has value and therefore preserves the labors and the fruits of one's labors, and an adequate supply of food that is always there on the grocery shelves and which you are free to secure at your leisure and choice. The deception concerning the energy crisis that has been established by the nation's capital has been now very effectively exposed by Chaplain Lindsay Williams, who for 2.5 years served with the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, which ran from Prudhoe Bay on the Alaska North Slope, 800 miles south to Valdez. He was given executive status, which made him privy to company operation, secrets, and technical data. Lindsay Williams observed in Wheatland, Wyoming, the shutdown of the pumping station on a major west-east pipeline. He also learned further upon consulting with an Atlantic Richfield executive back on the Alaska field that the shutdown had been ordered by the federal government, that it had been ordered for the explicit purpose of creating pressure on the American people relative to energy. No doubt, if you were to press Washington, they would have given you, and will give you now, some purported reason why the oil was shut down. It was obviously a calculated attempt to see how the people would react. And that's why it was spotted only in certain parts of the country, to see how far you could press the American public before they grabbed their guns and head for the streets. Chaplain Williams himself began to suspect something was very wrong with the whole picture which was given him and to the American people about the energy crisis. The size of the Prudhoe Bay field was enormous. Further testing, as a matter of fact, revealed, he found from the technical people, that the Alaska North Slope field was greater than all the oil of Saudi Arabia, which is considered the primary world field. The natural gas in itself on the North Slope was sufficient to supply the United States for 200 years at increasing ratios of consumption. In 1975, Pastor Chaplain Lindsay Williams was visited on the pipeline by a former Colorado State Senator, Hugh Chance. The senator was given a tour of the Prudhoe Bay Slope. He was given information, technical information, concerning what was there and what they had found. And he was told of the enormous potential of that field. When he and Mr. Lindsay went back to their room, the senator was appalled by what he had been told and what he had seen. And here's what he had to say, reading from The Energy Non-Crisis by Lindsay Williams, pages 15 through 19. After Senator Chance had talked at length with Mr. X, that is the company executive, We came back to my dormitory room at pump station number 1 and sat down. Senator Chance said to me, "Lindsay, I can hardly believe what I have seen and heard today." I waited to see what it was that was so startling. Remember, as yet, I had no inkling that there was, in fact, no true energy crisis. Senator Chance was very serious. He was obviously disturbed. He looked up at me and said, "Lindsay, I was in the Senate of the state of Colorado when the federal briefers came to inform us as to why there is an energy crisis. Lindsay, what I have heard and seen today compared with what I was told in the Senate of the state of Colorado makes me realize that almost everything I was told by those federal briefers was a downright lie." At that point, Senator Chance asked if I could arrange another interview with Mr. X on the following day. I did arrange for that interview, and the Senator and Mr. X sat in Mr. X's office. I was allowed to be president as Senator Hugh Chance asked question after question after question. Senator Chance's first question was, "Mr. X, how much crude oil is there under the North Slope of Alaska in your estimation?" Mr. X answered, "In my estimation, from the seismographic work and the drillings we have already done, I am convinced that there is as much oil under the North Slope of Alaska as there is in all of Saudi Arabia." Senator Hugh Chance's next question was perhaps an obvious one. "Why isn't this oil being produced if there is an oil crisis?" He went on to point out that private enterprise has always come to the rescue of the American people when there has been times of needs. Mr. X then made the startling observation that the federal government and the state government of Alaska had allowed only one pool of oil on the North Slope of Alaska to be developed. Senator Chance then asked, "Mr. X, do you think that there are numerous pools of oil under the North Slope of Alaska?" Mr. X replied, "Senator Chance, the government has allowed us to develop only one 100 square mile area of this vast North Slope. There are many, many 100 square mile areas under the North Slope of Alaska which contain oil. There are many pools of oil under the North Slope of Alaska." The Senator then asked, "Mr. X, what do you think the federal government is out to do? What do you really think the government has as its ultimate goal in this business?" Mr. X's answer was highly controversial in its implications. He stated, "I personally believe that the federal government is out to declare American telephone and telegraph a monopoly." This was back before 1980, several years ago. That, of course, has now come to pass. "I believe the federal government is out to declare American telephone and telegraph a monopoly. In so doing, they will be able to divide the company and to break the back of the largest private enterprise on the face of the earth. Secondly, they want to nationalize the oil companies. I believe that these two objectives merge." As Mr. X continued to elaborate his point of view, it became clear that the objectives, as he saw them, were of dramatic import for the economic welfare of this country and indeed for the whole world. Senator Chance asked one last question. "Mr. X, if what you say is true, then why don't you, as oil companies, tell the American people the truth and warn them?" "Senator Chance," Mr. X replied, "we don't dare tell the American people the truth because there are so many laws already passed and regulations on the books that if the government decided to impose them all on us and enforce them, they could put us in bankruptcy within 6 months." In light of what Mr. X stated in that conversation with Senator Chance, it would seem that the stakes are even bigger than money. They would involve power and domination, initially under the guise of government ownership and control of only the essential commodities and services, but then progressively beyond that. We would call it socialism. Others would give it different names. In the light of Mr. X's statements, that is the direction in which America is being led post-haste today. This book is an attempt to awaken the public to the facts before it is too late. Mr. X is a man whose observations must be taken seriously. He was one of the numerous executives with Atlantic Richfield who was given the responsibility of developing the entire east side of the oil field at Prudhoe Bay. His credibility cannot be denied. Mr. X has developed numerous oil fields for Atlantic Richfield throughout the world and has built numerous refineries. He is an expert in this field. Unquote. So this startling discovery on the part of the chaplain made it clear to him that full production of the Alaska North Slope would make the United States energy self-sufficient, which would indeed preserve our national independence. we didn't need the Arabs. The government control of energy, however, means the control of industry, the control of business, and the control of people. You can obviously see, if you know the last chapter of the book relative to where history is moving in the Antichrist tribulation world, that this is exactly the kind of condition that must be brought about, where the government controls the energy and the people therefore are totally dependent upon the government. The United States government, deliberately by shutting down the oil supplies and restricting the progress of developing new wells, deliberately pushed the price of gas up to a dollar. Many times you heard, as I heard, as gas was rising, that it's going to keep going up until it reaches a dollar. When it reaches a dollar, there will suddenly be lots of gas, and every gas station will be able to supply all the demands. That is precisely what happened. And it even went up beyond that. Mr. Lindsay indicated recently that he thinks that the price of gas being brought down is to lull the American people back to sleep, to thinking, well, it's all working out, the gas price is coming down. It is coming down, but you have also noticed that as soon as it got anywhere near below a dollar, the federal government slapped another 5 cents in order to fix the potholes on the interstate highway system. The state of Texas is now watching that price coming down with the hope that they can slap another 5 cents to start jacking it back up toward a dollar. Apparently, the goal is not to let it come much below a dollar. Discrediting the oil companies is an obvious attempt here, because if you can get people mad at the oil companies, which of course that is exactly what happened as the price of oil went up, they were labeled as the greedy guts, who were the robber barons, who were becoming rich as they had windfall profits and raised the price of oil. Naturally, when the Arab world went up, the oil in the United States had to follow suit. But all of this brought about by a calculated plan on the part of the federal government to create the pressures and the problems. Well, finally, the oil pipeline was set in motion. But all along the line, there were calculated delays again of the pipeline construction by the federal government in a variety of ways. I will just mention briefly some of them. If you'd like to pursue it in Mr. Williams's book, you can do so in greater detail. But there were constant efforts on the part of the federal government to force the oil companies to be paying more and more for the construction of that 800-mile long pipeline. The original cost of the pipeline was $6 million, and it was ready to go in 1971. The pipe was stacked at three strategic locations along the 800-mile corridor through which the line was to be built. The pipes themselves were 4 foot in height. In the early 70s, I was at the Alaska Bible College with our friend Bob Lee for 2 weeks of Bible lectures. In between the days of the lecture, Bob and I would go out on tours, and he gave me a tremendous opportunity to see various areas of Alaska, and one of the things he did was take me down to Valdez, which is the southern port where the pipeline ends and from which the oil is then transported to the United States. There I saw indeed these huge piles of the Alaska pipe, which had been milled and prepared in Japan, because already the costs were rising so precipitously for that sort of thing in the United States. They bought it from Japan, and the various pipes had different gauge thicknesses because they were all carefully laid out by the pipeline company that they were going to be under certain pressures, under certain tensions at various parts of the line when they went under a river and through mountain gorges, so that they would be clearly able to withstand the pressures out there on the tundra. Bob Lee and I ran across those pipes from one end to the other, hopping from pile to pile, running through the 4 foot things. All over the Alaska tundra, our footsteps are on pipe which is now buried under that tundra, and through which we ourselves personally ran, where the oil now runs. So I saw the pipes, and it was a big time operation, and they were ready to roll. But the environmental freaks, represented by such groups as the Sierra Club, got the construction delayed by securing a variety of laws. One of the primary ones was the demand for an enormous environmental impact study to ensure that the ecology would be protected, which the oil companies had already done in great detail. In 1973, the Arab oil embargo hit, and the price of the pipeline construction by that time had risen from $600 million to $2 billion. It was interesting that on one occasion, the late Senator Jackson of the state of Washington, when the Arabs hit us with that oil embargo, was bemoaning the fact that we did not have access to the Alaskan oil. And it is interesting, the mental processes of a politician, because as someone was quick to point out, he was one of the primary movers who had been instrumental in stopping the Alaska pipeline for environmental impact studies. Now he bemoaned the consequences of his own acts. Before the pipeline was finished, the government, by a series of harassments and delays, forced the price up to $12 billion, from $600 million to $12 billion before they finished it. At the very end of the operation, the oil companies did not think they could complete the pipeline, so they finally told their people, break all the rules. Pay no attention to what the government says. Get the thing built. We'll pay the fines. And they flooded the area with workers so that there were too many people working for the inspectors and the government watchmen to keep up with all of them. The government, of course, had no money in all of this pipeline project. It was entirely a private enterprise system all the way, and yet for some reason, the government wanted to make it very expensive, enormously expensive, more than the worth of the companies themselves. For example, on one occasion, an added cost of $2 million in order to route a road around a hill because there were two falcons in a nest on top of that hill. And rather than move the nest, they insisted that the road be routed around the hill and other hills, which also took the trucks away from the riverbed from whence they were getting the gravel and made it far more expensive. $2 million, $1 million for every falcon. And the fear of the regulation company, the fear of the government and the regulators must have been enormous, because I find it hard to imagine that a group of clever men running this pipeline would not have said, we know who the inspectors are, you guys keep them at a party tonight, we're going to send out an expedition and we're going to move those falcons. And the next morning we're going to say, why, looky there, the falcons have done moved their nest someplace else. So we can go ahead and build the road after all. Whether it occurred to anybody or not, I don't know, but obviously they didn't dare do it. So great was the fear of the oil companies, because the government had carefully created such an enormous number of regulations that if they hit the companies with it, they would put them into bankruptcy. Of course, that was the object of all these harassments. If the oil companies go into bankruptcy, what can the government do but take them over for the good of the people and nationalize them, and thus secure that control very directly over the American public, which needs that energy every time you walk out of your house in one way or another, and you need it every time you walk into your house in one way or another. The company, on one occasion, just as an example of something was done repeatedly, fined the pipeline company $10,000 when a truck driver inadvertently let the rear wheels of his truck back off onto the shoulder of the road onto the tundra, the precious tundra, which you can hardly hit and break with anything because it's frozen solid all the time. The Sierra Club repeatedly published false reports about the pipeline company destroying the Alaskan ecology in order to enrage the American people. And the truth of the matter is that the companies had spent millions in protecting the environment, and since the pipeline has been completed, it has been clearly shown that it has in no way affected the caribou and the bears and all the other wildlife. Those dudes don't care whether that pipeline is there or not. They just like to cuddle up against it because it's nice and warm because of the heat of the oil flowing through it. The government forced the company to install outhouses at $10,000 apiece. These outhouses had to be equipped in additional expense of Mercedes-Benz engines. It was an arrangement that would immediately burn and reduce to ashes the refuse, and then it would blow it out into the atmosphere. And Chaplain Lindsay said he always knew when somebody had used the outhouse after the Mercedes-Benz got started and deteriorating the refuse and blowing it out into the atmosphere. He said you could smell it, and the pollution was there. The government required the company to haul the sewage from the main base by helicopter to Anchorage at $6,500 a round trip. However, they made no efforts to put diapers on the bears and the caribou, who blandly continued fertilizing the tundra. Barges would haul in the basic equipment that was needed to supply the fields. They would come in at the time of the year when the ice had melted and the bay was clear. In 1975, before the barges could be unloaded and get back out of Prudhoe Bay, the ice came in. And they realized that they had an enormous problem. Once the ice formed around those barges, it would crush them and destroy them. Millions of dollars of barge equipment and other equipment on them. The oil companies asked for permission to solve the problem by building out a gravel dock right out on the Arctic Ocean floor there in the Beaufort Sea, because it's relatively shallow, and thus to work their way out to the barges, and then they could haul the barges up on the gravel dock and preserve them for the winter, because they now could not get out. Well, the government procrastinated, the environmentalists fought, and the government finally refused, because there were microorganisms on the bottom of the ocean floor at that time that would be destroyed if they built the gravel dock. It's just ignoring the fact that these same microorganisms were all along the coastline for hundreds and hundreds of miles. In the final year of the pipeline construction, the government demanded that the whole sewage disposal systems be changed and a new one installed, in spite of the fact that the water, after the system had done its job, was pure enough to be drunk. During the last 6 months of the construction, the environmentalists claimed that the welding of the pipe joints was defective. And all of you perhaps can remember how suddenly the newspapers, for 3 months, the media kept hammering away, the welding on the joints of the pipes is defective. There's going to be the greatest spill in the history of the world out in the tundra if they don't stop and correct all that. Groups like the Sierra Club were demanding that the whole pipeline be dug up again. This is 6 months from completion. 2 years had gone by. Now 6 months from the end, dig it all up again. Some of that could not have been done. At certain times you couldn't dig it up from under the river, and particularly at this time, because it was the time when the fish were spawning, and it would indeed have been destructive to the fish life and to the environment. So the whole project would have been stopped, and it was undoubtedly a calculated time when they said, now is the time we want to say that the wells are no good. Well, of course, they had x-rayed these wells all along the line as they were preparing the pipeline, and they had kept records and they had pictures, and the government was forced to bring an expert in. The oil companies agreed whatever this expert said they would do, and the expert examined the records and said that all the wells were perfect. There was no problem. Even then, the government forced them to dig up some sections of the pipeline, re-examine the wells, discover that they were good, and put the pipe back in. Time came, with this constant harassment and raising of the costs, that the companies, Atlantic Richfield, for example, had to borrow its own total net worth. That's called bankruptcy. You have to borrow against yourself all that you're worth, simply in the hopes that they could complete the pipeline, get the oil flowing, and survive. The people from whom they borrowed the money were the international mega bankers, such as Chase Manhattan of the David Rockefeller fame, or infamy, and also the Arab sheiks, who had the great vast sources of money now because of the energy crisis that had been created and the forcing up of the price of the crude oil. And the agreement included that we'll lend you the money and save your hide, but you must put one of the mega bankers on your boards as well as the government controls. So that in effect, the surveillance upon the oil companies is now complete, the majors, and in effect, the oil companies have been nationalized and under full control. This is what's known as fascism. In Hitler's Germany, the government did not take over the industries. They permitted the industries to continue under so-called private ownership, but the government put agents in who were responsible and in final authority, who decided what the companies could and could not do with their particular industry. So they were in effect, de facto, nationalized. The rising cost of gas at the pumps with all of this, and you do understand that when you put in a $10,000 outhouse plus the cost of a Mercedes-Benz engine, you have to pay for it at the pump. That's where the oil companies have to pass on the cost. And the result was that the rising cost of gasoline was enraging the American people against the oil companies, enraging them till there were constant cries, take them over, let the government run the companies. But that's not all. Just how bad this deception from Washington and this false, fake energy crisis was particularly demonstrated by one of the greatest of the oil finds on the North Slope. About 5 miles out into the Beaufort Sea of the Arctic Ocean is a small island called Gull Island. In 1976, they had completed the drilling of a well, which strangely enough, after considerable struggle, the government finally agreed to permit them to drill. This was on the very edge of the 100 square miles that they were being permitted to drill on. The company had to be very careful that the drill went straight down and did not slope off to the north. Otherwise, they knew what the government would do to them in accusing them of having stepped out of their restricted boundaries. So they did everything by the book. When the drill was completed, Chaplain Williams was invited by one of the executives of the Atlantic Richfield Company, who had set that well, to accompany him on what was going to be a very exciting day. The chaplain would ride with different executives, so he was always on the line someplace to be at hand where he could be of use to the men. The Prudhoe Bay field itself produces oil at the rate of 2 million barrels every 24 hours. It is the richest oil field in the world, and it is just one small segment. Because of that, this comment was made by this executive to Chaplain Williams, quoting from his book on page 167. "Chaplain, there is no energy crisis. There never has been an energy crisis. There never will be an energy crisis. We have as much oil here as in all of Saudi Arabia. If only the oil companies of America were allowed to produce it, we would have no crisis. Oh, we've been told there's a crisis, but there isn't one." So, the chaplain, with knowing that, and now well aware that something very deceptive was being done, showed up that day at this executive's office. This executive said, "Chaplain, ride with me. Something exciting is going to happen today." Well, what they were going to do was to run a burn. Those of you who go to the Berean Youth Club summer camps, remember a few years ago we suddenly heard this thunderous, continuous, loud noise, and we wondered what on earth that was, and finally we traced it down to a side dirt road where they had just completed a well, and they were testing it. And the way they test it is to ignite the well for a period of time of 24 hours or something, and out of that test they can determine the size of the pool, the quality of the oil, and so on. And they call that a burn. The Gull Island well had been completed. Now came the test. The measuring instruments were there. They were connected back with the executive's offices for transmitting the information. The executive and the chaplain drove out to the end of the gravel dock there on the edge of the Beaufort Sea. And with their binoculars, they sat there watching Gull Island, waiting for the burn to take place. Here's what happened. Page 169. They sat there talking to each other, discussing this whole problem of the energy crisis. Then it happened. "I remember he stopped his conversation very abruptly and picked up his field glasses from beside him on the seat of the truck and exclaimed, 'Look, Chaplain, there it is.' We both stepped out of the truck, even though it was very cold outside. I have forgotten whether we even closed the door or not, but both of us were excited. So we looked, straining our eyes, to see across to Gull Island over the ocean. They called it Gull Island because the only thing ever known to be on it was a flock of seagulls in the summertime. And there it was. A great cloud of black smoke was going up. It was almost as though a great black bomb had exploded, and the cloud grew bigger and bigger. The wind picked up the trail of the smoke and threw it to the north, and there it lay. It was like a great big cylinder churning out across the ocean. This surely was an exciting find. There could be no more nonsense about an energy crisis now. Surely there couldn't. But I was wrong. So very wrong." Unquote. The chaplain went to bed that night very excited, and looked forward to getting up the next morning, anticipating that the headlines of all the newspapers would announce this tremendously important find, which now indeed, once and for all, terminated the energy crisis that purportedly existed. The executive immediately wanted to confirm, to examine what the results were. So he and the chaplain hopped back into the truck, and they rushed back to the office where they could read the data that was coming in from the Gull Island burn. The results were spectacular. For a while, other executives milled around in the office. Everybody was very excited over what they were finding. Finally, everyone left. Then Chaplain Williams writes on page 172, "After everyone had left the office, that oil company official said to me, 'Chaplain, we have just discovered and proven another pool of oil as big and maybe even bigger than the Prudhoe Bay field. That one produces 2 million barrels every 24 hours. This is phenomenal beyond words.' He again said, 'There is no energy crisis. Now we can build a second pipeline. Now we can produce not only 2 million barrels of oil every 24 hours, but we can produce 4 million barrels of oil every 24 hours. Chaplain, this is what we as oil company officials have been waiting for.' Then suddenly, the excitement was wiped off his face as he looked back at me and said, 'I hope the federal government doesn't pose any difficulty over this because of the fact that it's located on the very edge of the designated area from which we can produce.' Then he looked back again and said, 'Chaplain, if this is allowed to be produced, we can build another pipeline, and in another year's time, we can flood America with oil, Alaskan oil, our own oil, and we won't have to worry about the Arabs. We won't be dependent on any nation on earth. That's the problem.'" In the satanic world of the Antichrist, it has to be an interdependent world where nations cannot be independent and stand on their own feet, enjoying their own freedom. See? Continuing, "Chaplain, if there are two pools of oil here this big, there are many, many dozens of pools of oil all over this north slope of Alaska." He went on to say, "Chaplain, America has just become energy independent. I must repeat that this high official of ARCO said America has just become energy independent. I do not think that I have ever seen a man so excited as that man was that day as he explained to me that find at Gull Island." The chaplain left, went to sleep that night, expecting to get up the next morning and see the blazing headlines on the newspapers from around the country that were brought in of what had been found on Gull Island and what this meant to the energy crisis in the country. But he was in for a great disappointment. Page 177. He got up that morning, went through breakfast, hurried back to the executive's office. "I walked into the base camp and there was nothing exceptional going on. I went by the security guard and he was just nonchalantly sitting there as if nothing special had taken place. I said, 'Sir, where is Mr. So-and-so? He said, 'He's out riding around in his vehicle.' I asked, 'Can you call him on the radio?' He said, 'Sure.' He called him on the radio and said, 'Chaplain Williams is here to see you.' The man called back with what seemed to be an air of fear in his voice. And he said, 'Chaplain Williams? Yes, please tell him to stay right there and not leave. I need to see him. Tell him to please wait for me in my office. I'll be in immediately.' I went to his office and sat down and wondered why it was that on this day the trumpets were not sounding. This was a phenomenal thing, and yet there seemed to be no fuss at all about it. Sure enough, without delay, the oil company official soon walked into his office and closed the door behind him. He looked at me with a frown on his face and said, 'Chaplain, what you saw yesterday, don't you ever, as long as you live, let anything out that would tell anyone the data that you saw on those technical sheets.' I said, 'But sir, that's going to end the energy crisis in America.' He said, 'No, Chaplain, it's not. Quite to the contrary.' As he sat down behind his desk, I noticed that he was very worried. And then he continued, 'Chaplain, you weren't supposed to see what I showed you yesterday. I'm sorry I let you go with me out there to watch that burn. I'm even more perturbed that I let you look at the technical data because, Chaplain, you and I might both be in trouble if you ever tell the story of Gull Island.'" He didn't tell him not to tell the story. Just said, "You're going to be in trouble if he does." "I watched with my own eyes what I never thought I could see in the United States of America. maybe in socialist Russia yet, maybe under a dictatorship, but in America, no. After all, this was the country of the people, by the people, for the people. Within a few days after the find and the proof of the find, proof of the vast amount of oil, I listened as that official told me that the government had ordered the oil company to seal the documents, withdraw the rig, cap the well, and not release the information about the Gull Island find. That oil field is partially under the area that the oil companies were not allowed to produce from. It is in the Arctic Ocean, and microorganisms of that area might be destroyed if an oil spill ever happens. Seal the documents, withdraw the rig, and cap the well. This company official said to me, "Chaplain, that great pool of oil is probably as big as the Prudhoe oil field. It has been proven, drilled into, and tested. We know what is there, and we know the amount that is there, but government has ordered us not to produce that well or reveal any information as to what is at Gull Island." Unquote. Now, it is obvious that there are some powerful united forces in the United States government who have, to this day, some 9 years later, kept the cap on the Gull Island well. If that were removed, and that well were permitted to produce, gasoline would fall below 50 cents a gallon practically the next day, let alone what it would do to fuel oil, home heating fuel oil, as well as to diesel fuel. Three more wells were drilled and proven on Gull Island, all of them spectacular. The government said, "Cap them." The government reports now will minimize to you, if you ask them about the Prudhoe Bay field, they'll deny that the field was as vast as they had originally intended, and they have indicated in government documents, right there in the printed page, and you can send for this, that there have been no new finds of any substance in the North Slope of Alaska. Furthermore, the word was sent out that even what they found in the Prudhoe Bay area cannot be refined by American refineries because there is such a high sulfur content. When Chaplain Williams took that bit of criticism to the executive at ARCO, he laughed in his face. He said, "Did they really tell you that?" And he said, "This oil can easily be refined by any refinery in the United States." But there is more. When the oil companies were authorized to build this pipeline, they were told by the United States government that they would also be able immediately to follow through down the same corridor with a gas pipeline, natural gas pipeline. And so the companies, therefore, prepared to do just that. They built the oil pipeline in such a way that it was then an easy project to come immediately after following up with a natural gas pipeline. On page 205 of Mr. Williams's book, here's what he says. Quote, "Well," he said, "Chaplain, we've been promised that we could produce the natural gas. We've been promised that the federal government would allow us to build a natural gas pipeline down the same corridor from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, and there to liquefy the natural gas. That was the original proposal, and we have built the pipeline down the corridor with the intent of carrying the natural gas line as well. It was to be taken down the corridor from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, then liquefied and taken out by ship to the lower 48 states. Then it was to be regasified and eventually sent by pipeline all across America." I said, "Yes, Mr. X, I remember that was the proposal. In fact, there are still many hundreds of men in Alaska right now who are here for the purpose of being a part of the construction job to build the natural gas pipeline. I remember the technicians and the engineers telling me in each of the work camps that they expected the natural gas pipeline to be constructed shortly. Most of them were expecting that project to start just as quickly as this project ended." "Yes," Mr. X said, "that project was to start on the heels of this one. But I'm predicting now, Chaplain, that the natural gas of Prudhoe Bay oil field will never be produced." I said, "Mr. X, don't I remember you telling me one time about 2 years ago that there was a plentiful amount of natural gas right in the Prudhoe Bay oil field alone?" "Yes," Mr. X agreed, "there's enough natural gas on the North Slope of Alaska to provide the entire United States with natural gas for the next 200 years. If every other natural gas well in America were shut off, there would still be enough natural gas on the North Slope to provide for the total projected natural gas needs for all of the United States for 200 years. That is based on the present calculated rate of consumption and the expected increased consumption year by year. There's still enough there to provide all the projected needs of the United States for 200 years. Well, I commented, Mr. X, we've been told that there was a natural gas shortage as well as an oil crisis. Mr. X kind of laughed. Chaplain, that natural gas pipeline will never be built. I asked him, what are you doing with the natural gas at Prudhoe Bay? That gas comes out of the ground right along with the oil. You have to do something with it. He told me, yes, Chaplain, we have to do something with it. We cannot burn it. They will not allow us to. Therefore, it is costing us millions and millions of dollars to build huge facilities and to drill additional wells and to provide huge injection pumps to pump that natural gas back into the ground. We are pumping the same gas back into the same field that it came from, as many, many cubic feet per day. Unquote. So, the natural gas from the Prudhoe Bay area, the pipeline was again stalled by the government. Now, here's one thing that you and I certainly can relate to. When we got this recent cold spell, all of us hurt badly with the gas bills we got. If it had not been for the gracious rallying of this congregation, we would have been hard-pressed to pay the enormity of the gas bills that we had. And yet, up there on Prudhoe Bay lies enormous, huge quantities of low-cost energy that the oil companies are eager to bring down if they would only be permitted to do so. Here's what has happened. The pipeline has been squelched. Chaplain continued, speaking with the ARCO executive, said, well, I reflected, it would be no trouble to build a natural gas pipeline down the same corridor and bring the natural gas to America. After all, it is already available. The well has already been drilled and the corridor itself is available. The pump stations and all the facilities are already there. Even the camps would soon be ready to be occupied again. The camps had been built and left. Mr. X agreed. Then he gave a startling prediction that came true only a few months later. You who read this book should mark it clearly in your own mind, for it is very significant. He made the projection that President Carter would have a choice as to which way the natural gas pipeline would be constructed. It could be built down the same present corridor from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, then liquefied in Valdez and taken out by ship to the lower 48 states, or President Carter would have the alternative of having the natural gas pipeline built across Canada. That would be over 3,000 miles to the United States. 3,000 miles of pipe across another country, rather than 800 miles of pipe across an already existing corridor down one of our own states. Mr. X said, Chaplain, I predict that when the President comes to the time of his choice, he will choose that the natural gas pipeline be built across Canada, and that it cannot by any circumstances be built across Alaska, liquefied, taken to the West Coast, and then distributed across America. I was confused and asked, why do you predict that? What is the significance of that? He answered, within 6 months' time, we could be producing natural gas for America down the present corridor, which has already been built for it. Now, this is some 9 years ago, you know. The natural gas could go down the same route that has been used for the Prudhoe Bay oil. A natural gas pipeline could be built down that corridor within 6 months, and a liquefaction plant in Valdez could be built in a few months because everything is ready to go. Within a matter of months, the natural gas could be distributed across the entire United States with the addition of a few cross-country pipelines. If that were done, there would never be any crisis of natural gas in all the lower 48 states of America, and that could all be accomplished within a matter of a few months. He paused. But Chaplain, if the President chooses to take the natural gas pipeline across Canada, it will never be built. Again, I pressed him for an answer. But, sir, why could it never be built? He told me, first of all, the reason it will never be built is that with the rate of inflation in America today and around the world, there is no consortium of gas companies in the world that could afford to build that pipeline. They could not raise that kind of money. Chaplain, the red tape that is involved and approval by Canada for that pipeline to be built across their country rule it out, plus, of course, the royalties that Canada would require of us. There is no way the red tape and all the other details would be completed in your lifetime or mine to carry that pipeline across Canada. Then I asked, Mr. X, are you trying to tell me that President Carter and his advisors intentionally chose for that pipeline to go across Canada because he wanted to stop that gas from reaching the lower 48 states? Mr. X looked back at me and said, Chaplain, that is exactly right. So that natural gas from the Prudhoe Bay oil field, a field that could provide the entire United States with gas for 200 years, will never reach the lower 48 and our big cities. The reason is that the government has deliberately chosen that it will not reach the people of America. I said, but sir, surely the government officials must care something for our people. Mr. X said, Chaplain, mark my words, that natural gas pipeline will never be built. Well, I said, sir, what will happen to the Prudhoe Bay oil field? I've been told that the natural gas top has to come off after a certain period of time, or the oil field cannot be properly produced because there will be too much top pressure. He nodded, yes, Chaplain, that is exactly correct. If something is not done within 5 years, this was 9 years ago, we will begin to have difficulties with the production of the crude oil from Prudhoe Bay field. Somebody called my attention to a small article in the newspaper recently that stated just this, the problems now that are occurring at the Prudhoe Bay oil field with getting the oil out. Here's the reason. Then I said, Mr. X, could this also be possibly a part of the great plot to somehow shorten the life of the Prudhoe Bay oil field because they will not allow the natural gas to be taken off and used or to be burned? He just looked at me with a rather unusual smile as if to say, well, even you, Chaplain, have sense enough to know that. I then asked, what will you do over a period of time? He said, after so many years, we will have to inject water into the ground and hope we can keep up the pressure of the field to the point where we can maintain production over the number of years that we have projected that the oil field can produce. So what about natural gas? No, it will never reach America. And what about Alaska? You guessed it. Morris Udall's bill came along, so now we will take most of the land in Alaska and lock it up in wilderness areas for all time and eternity. This was just one more part of the great plan to lock up all the energy that is so abundant in the North Slope of Alaska. The D2 land bill has passed. The natural resources can never be produced. It can never be drilled and it can never be used. We will never be allowed to find out more, to make tests, to see what is there. There are powerful forces in this country that have created an energy crisis. Here is a man who has been on the field, who spoke to men who were in charge, and it is documented and reliable. Those of you who have camped with us in the Berean Youth Clubs in the Rocky Mountain National Park know about the Estes Park area. An interesting thing occurred there in 1980. In 1980, it was observed that there was drilling, oil rigs being put up in the Estes Park area. A forest fire occurred, and the Natural Ranger firefighting team came out to fight the fire, and they were told that they were not to go into that area, that others would handle the fire, and they were ordered to stay out. They said, but you're not equipped to handle that. We are equipped. They said, no, you can't go in. They did not control the fire. It burned wildly out of control, destroyed some of those oil rigs, but they blandly went right back and reestablished them. Then the wells were kept in the Estes Park area, and the word went out, another big find right here in the lower 48. So the conclusion, the United States government has clearly produced the energy shortage with which the American people are now suffering. There is some power who is determined not to supply American industry with cheap fuel, which, if it happened, you see, would set off a new era of prosperity, jobs, and national independence. It would not be a country that you could easily bring into the Antichrist world. Prosperous people are free people, and they are not inclined to want to become part of a one-world socialist government. The Socialist Party of the United States has been consistently and persistently seeking to lock up and to restrict energy supplies. It is not without reason. And that's why this kind of a discussion as we're having tonight is going to be ridiculed, is going to be made fun of by those who have socialist-oriented mentalities, because they recognize that this is a dire threat to the kind of a world where faceless bureaucrats call the play, or else the individuals are ignorant of where this sort of thing ultimately leads and where they cannot control it. The energy conspiracy makes perfect sense when you know the last chapter of the Bible. You know of the tribulation world. I won't read to you at this time. Our time has run out. But Chaplain Williams comes to the end of his book, and he makes a superb summary. The man is right on target. And in brief, he says just what we have said. This is preparation for a world government structure. To bring people under that control, you must deny them cheap energy. The control of energy means the control of America. The control of Americans means the subjection to government goals. Government goals are clearly leading to the Antichrist world. Now, I don't like to talk on subjects like this, and I don't like to bring this to your attention without giving some indication as to where do we go from here. There are forces. The New Age movement is at the heart of it. There are powerful forces that are woven throughout the government. The New Age movement boasts of the fact that they have members right there within the president's cabinet, right there within the highest echelons of the government, within the highest echelons of the bureaucracies, and they are calling the plays for creating a world which will be subject to an interdependent world where nations will not be independent. A world government can be brought about. And they are bragging about controlling the food, controlling the money, controlling the energy. It's discouraging. And while we know that ultimately the last chapter is going to be just the way they're writing it, I must call to your attention Luke chapter 19, verse 13, where the Lord Jesus Christ lays down the principle which is to be our guideline in the meantime. He called his 10 servants, the master, the landlord, and he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. He gave them each a sum of money. And he said, do business until you see me return. I'm leaving. I'm going to put it in your hands. And my message to you is to keep on keeping on doing business at the same old stand until I return. We who are related to the Lord Jesus Christ are related to him because he has done a tremendously marvelous thing for us. It is summarized in 2 Corinthians 5:21, which says, for he, God the Father, hath made him, the Lord Jesus Christ, God the Son, who knew no sin, who was himself without a sin nature and perfectly sinless in his personal life, made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, to bear our sins, to be imputed from him, to be wiped off of our slate and put on his, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him, that we might be declared in God's sight to be absolutely perfect. The absolute righteousness of God. You and I know that we have to be absolutely perfect in righteousness to go to heaven. We have to be as good as Jesus Christ in that respect. He has made it possible. Our message is to get this word out to people who need to hear it. And once they have come into the family of God, to get them instructed in what their heritage is as Christians and what their glories and the rights are theirs as members of the royal family. It's going to separate us. It's going to isolate us. One of the greatest sins in the New Age movement is to be separated. To be a separatist, they call that. That is to be separated unto God away from the evil system of our society. So our call is to go out and reach out. Keep praying for Operation Highways and Hedges. Keep praying for Mr. Cross and these other people upon whom a great burden lies as they get the final pieces of the information and the literature together, and then we are ready to go. Pray that God would alert throughout this city, men and women, to the fact that there is a God out there who has informed us, and if we will live by his rules, we will enjoy great success, personally and as a nation. There is a conspiracy out there. We, in the meantime, must resist with everything available. We, in the meantime, must continue to proclaim the truth. Our Father, we thank you for this.